This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today I'm with Ginger Schulich-Porcella, Executive Director of the Museum of Contemporary Art Tucson, also known as MoCA Tucson. Welcome, Ginger.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Ginger, I wanted to start with talking about the building itself. Because it's so unique, I wondered if you could tell us about it, describe it to us, its very interesting characteristics and location, and a little bit about what it's like to have a contemporary art museum in such a place.
Sure. MoCA Tucson is right downtown Tucson, next to the police station. It was the old firehouse for Tucson up until 2010 when we moved in. The building is neo-brutalist architecture. It was built in the late 60s, early 70s, and it's a beautiful, industrial, yet challenging space. I think it lends itself well to contemporary art because it has this voluminous, we call it the Great Hall, and we have the possibility to do indoor and outdoor programming because we still have the old firehouse doors that roll up. So it's a fun space, but, you know, challenging to heat and cool. We have some smaller gallery spaces as well that were the old offices for the fire department. The second floor were also offices. We have our education space for youth up there. We have our offices. And then on the third floor was residential because firemen and women lived up there. So we've turned that into our artist in residence program. So we have two artists at a time living up there, making work up there. And it's just a fun, active space.
The light is really amazing. The doors, they go up on both sides, right?
They do.
There's six gigantic doors?
Six gigantic doors, yes. Right now, because of the show that we have up, the back doors are closed off. We have these big flags sort of covering them so they can't move. But typically, we are able to open and close them, which makes it easy to install really large art installations in there because we can just literally drive a truck into the back of the museum. And it's haunted.
I was going to ask you about that. You read my mind.
It is haunted, purportedly so. I have had interaction with an entity there, as have many others. And there's a group here, Haunted Tucson, that has come several times to the museum to do recordings. And I believe they're doing a book on different haunted spaces in Tucson, which MoCA will be included in, but many people have had encounters both in the Great Hall and on the third floor where the artists in residence are. We don't tell the artists before they move in that it's haunted. We just let them discover that by surprise on their own.
So have artists in residence mentioned weird stuff to you?
Everyone.
Can you give an example?
I don't know specifically what artists have encountered. They all say it's very creepy up there. There's just sort of a weird energy. I know most people who have had physical encounters have seen a shadow figure. It's a shadow figure. So we don't know, is it an old fire person? Is it older than that? Is it the ghost of Christmas past? Who knows? There is definitely reported entity that lives there. I've had an encounter. When I first came to Tucson 2 years ago, I was standing in the Great Hall and I felt it push past me. I thought it was one of my employees and I thought it was really weird that one of my employees would push me. And I looked and the door next to me opened and slammed shut. And I went into the room and no one was there and the lights were turned off.
I imagine you have to work there pretty late at night sometimes.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. But it's great. Come to MoCA. You will not be haunted by a ghost that may or may not live there.
And you can always just call the police because they're next door.
Exactly. Yeah, who knows what happened in there before.
How does it impact you to have the police station next door?
Well, I think we can probably get away with a lot more. It's interesting. And I don't, you know, I don't want to encourage like criminal activity or anything. But I do think that, you know, there is this like 24/7 security that we have there. I think that our place feels very protected because we're right by the police department. We do have a really good view on training exercises that happen in the police department parking lot. We watch their Segway training, which I've always wanted to take a video of because they do this thing where they practice falling off of the Segways. And it's pretty amazing. We can make a video and then show it at Mocha. Who knows?
I really want to see that video now. So you had touched upon the third floor, which is the space in which the artists in residence stay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the artist in residence experience?
Yeah. The artist in residence program at Mocha is the thing that I'm actually most passionate about. It's something that I really developed when I came here. And, you know, I have a background starting and running a number of artist residency programs across the United States. So I think for me, the real draw to coming to Tucson and to Mocha in particular was the space that we had. And as soon as I saw that third floor and saw that it was residential, you know, it has a kitchen, it has, you know, bathrooms, it has huge spaces, private spaces and shared spaces. You know, the first thing I said was, you know, we have to have an artist residency program up here. I mean, we have the space. I want it to be an active and dynamic environment. And so we do an open call each year. Usually we announce it in the spring. So probably in about April, we'll be announcing our open call for residencies for 2020. And we get about 700 applications for just 8 slots. And artists can stay for up to 3 months. They get a separate apartment space and a separate studio space, about 500 square feet each. They get a private bathroom. They have shared kitchen and living quarters. The artists, you know, make new work in the space. A lot of artists are drawn to it because, you know, an artist living in New York or LA, they don't have that sort of studio space. And a lot of artists are really inspired by unique desert landscape. Being right downtown in Tucson, yet having access to the desert is really appealing to a lot of artists. They can stay for up to 3 months. They have to stay a minimum of 3 weeks, but most stay for the full 3 months. We allow them to bring partners. We allow them to bring dogs. One artist brought their dying cat with them. You know, I couldn't say no to their ailing cat. So we really try and make it as flexible as possible for the artist. They get a small stipend for being there. We give them professional development support. We give them access to curators. I invite different curators, both locally and visiting curators from LA or Phoenix or New York, to do studio visits with them. Which I think is the biggest appeal, because space is one thing, but having access to curators, I find, is the biggest draw for artists, because if curators don't know about their work, then it doesn't exist. So all of the artists who have done the residency so far have been extremely positive about it. Most of our applications come from peer recommendations, from curators, artists who have done it, or gallerists recommending it to the artists that they work with. And we've even had some artists move to Tucson afterwards because they love the program so much.
What did they cite as their motivation to actually relocate to Tucson?
I mean, Tucson's charming, as you know. It is incredibly inexpensive as compared to other spaces like New York or Los Angeles. I think it's a really supportive arts community here too. So all of the artists, we've had 3 artists now move in the past 2 years, which I think is an astounding statistic, relocate to Tucson after doing the residency program because they were just so charmed by the community, by the cost of living in Tucson. And I think, you know, there's a lot of potential to make, you know, experimental work in Tucson because it's not driven by a commercial art market. You can make big work here. You can work outside most of the year. So I think these are all things that really draw people to Tucson.
Not being driven by a commercial art market is something that I think maybe a lot of lay people have never thought about how that actually shapes the art landscape. Could you talk to us a little bit more about that, about art collectors and that side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it can be looked at as negative in some regards, but I actually think it's the biggest positive, you know, running a museum in Tucson. And certainly I think for artists making work in Tucson, I think it's better to not be driven by the market. Artists in New York and LA, I see them making works that they know will sell in galleries in New York and LA. And I think in Tucson, artists are just free to make whatever work they want to. And I see a lot more experimental work being made here. I'm not just talking about the visual arts scene. I think that there's a really good music scene here, performance art scene. I mean, I think the performance art community here is just, you know, one of the best I've seen anywhere. I think there's opportunities to create work without, you know, being beholden to what the market determines the art should be. Certainly there's art collectors here and big art collectors here, but you know, I think that there could be, you know, more support for the local community. But I think that, you know, the art collectors that are here try to support the arts as much as they can.
It's kind of a different way to think about how we kind of compare to some of the larger markets and how it can be positive and negative. You came to us from the San Diego Art Institute about 2 years ago. Could you share a story with us about how working in Tucson is different from working in San Diego?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tucson is the exact opposite of San Diego, like in all regards. I mean, you're in a desert as opposed to living, you know, next to the water. You know, you're a liberal town in a more conservative state as opposed to a very conservative town in a more liberal state. And those were things that were really appealing to me. I think San Diego's difficult because it's so close to Los Angeles. I think that it really suffers because of that proximity. It's hard for people to place a value on contemporary art when they're constantly competing with perfect weather, the ocean, and Los Angeles, which is a huge cultural center. I mean, the second largest, you know, cultural market in the United States. So I think it's really difficult, and I found it incredibly difficult to do the sort of work that is supported here in Tucson. I mean, I love the work that I was doing in San Diego, and I love the friends and the artists that I made there, but I feel like the work that I'm doing in Tucson is supported in a much more meaningful way and encouraged. And I feel like I'm able to do much more, you know, edgier work, work that may have faced resistance in a more conservative town. People are interested in being challenged. They want to see new work. They want to see challenging work. And they're open to that. And I think that's really great in terms of the audience here in Tucson. I mean, I feel like I've been able to present work that if I had presented it in San Diego or even New York to some extent, people would have really shied away from.
Can you perhaps give us an example of some of the edgier stuff that you've been able to embark on here in Tucson?
You know, one example that I'm thinking of, you know, local artist here that we work with very closely, Adam Cooper Turan. He's a good friend of mine and I think a very talented artist. And, you know, he presented this performance at the opening of our last show, Blessed Be, that was a curse on our corporate masters. And, you know, there was nudity and public urination. It was a very intense yet beautiful ritual that I think I was a little worried, like, oh, people are gonna, like, it's a little off-putting to people, but people stayed for it. Like 200 people were raptly watching it, and they thought it was really beautiful, and they really got the performance. And I think the recent performance that we did with Castles and Ron Athey and Arshia Haque in the Lung of the Biosphere is another example of that. Castles and Ron Athey are two of the best living performance artists working today, and they did work that in most places would be considered very controversial or edgy. You know, Castles is a well-known transgender performance artist, and they use their body to do these really intense pieces. And Ron Athey, he reenacted his human printing press piece from the early 90s, which when he first did that performance, it caused a huge controversy. He lost his funding from the NEA because people were saying that they were being exposed to AIDS through this performance. And he had not done that performance in since the early 90s. And he brought it back here. He did it in Tucson for World AIDS Day on December 1st. And people were so excited to see that performance because they hadn't seen it since the early 90s. And to be able to present that work in Tucson is huge. On the more fun side, I think the performance that we did with David Henry Nobody Jr. as part of our fall fundraiser, you know, there was a lot of nudity and food and sexual content, but people got super into it. So, I mean, we even had audience members like join in the performance. Like, that's cool. So, you never know what people are into here.
So I happened to be at the Surrealist dinner party, and it was definitely something that pushed the envelope in terms of what I've seen in Tucson. And I thought it would be worth describing because it was so sensory in every way.
The sights, the sounds, the smells. I don't think people look at or smell peanut butter the same way after that. I've consistently heard like, oh, I can't eat peanut butter anymore, or like the smell of peanut butter just reminds me of that. So I love that. I love that now people, like, you know, this thing that you eat all the time, you're like, I can't even touch peanut butter anymore. Yeah, so David Henry Nobody Jr., he's a performance artist in New York. I've been following him on Instagram for years, and he's been this newest series of performances he's been doing are, he calls them edible wardrobe malfunctions. So they're like mechanical sculptures, kinetic sculptures, but food-based. And so he had proposed for our fall fundraiser to do a fashion show of edible wardrobe malfunctions. But he did a really interesting thing in which he did these printed, they were like second skins on the model. So the models were naked, and then he printed the skin of celebrities on them. So they were going down the runway as like Kim Kardashian and these other sort of like celebrity figures, but covered in, well, they, you know, they had a very traditional runway show, and then it sort of devolved from there. to put it, you know, nicely. So the artist and a bunch of helpers covered the models in, you know, layers of like shaving cream and like hot dogs and peanut butter. But it was like this beautiful collage that he made on their body. It was like the most interesting sculptural thing that I've, I mean, like, you would be really surprised what the combination of, you know, shaving cream and peanut butter does. But then at the end of the runway, there was a bed just slathered in peanut butter. And the runway show sort of culminated in all of the models very sexually writhing in peanut butter. It was pretty gross. but yeah, people from the audience joined in, which I, you know, I was very surprised, but who knows? Some people really like, I guess, rolling around in food. It was, from what I hear from a lot of people who attended, they thought it was really, you know, bizarre and cool. A lot of people were just like blown away that they saw something like that in Tucson. That was I think the comment I heard the most was like, oh, I thought I'd never see something like this in Tucson. And for me, that's a huge compliment. I want to keep bringing these sort of multi-sensory experiences to Tucson that, you know, you think you know Tucson, and then it's like you have this once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know, I want to keep providing once-in-a-lifetime experiences all the time. So you never know what you're going to get.
I also loved that someone came around and offered us hot dogs in the middle of that performance.
I mean, and it was a surrealist fundraiser. I wanted it to be like you took LSD, but without actually taking drugs. And for me, that's like what I'm always aiming for. I want people to feel like they're tripping on acid, but they're just in the space. Brian and Ryan, they're these artists that I've worked with for a long time. And yeah, so they did a hot dog eating contest and they were serving hot dogs throughout the event. We had someone juggling donuts. We had a woman who was sort of like had these sculptural breasts that she was like milking during the performance. Yeah, there was a lot of things going on. And we had Tucson's own The Pork Torta, you know, to keep with the food theme. They performed at the event. I thought it was pretty great.
So can you talk about the kind of responses or non-responses that you got after that event?
I mean, I think the most frequent response that I got was really how amazing yet gross it was. You know, our fall fundraiser is really designed to be like the anti-gala. We have a gala every spring that's, you know, it's a higher ticket price. It's like, you know, a black tie event. It's, you know, a very, it's fun and it's great, but it's a very typical gala. And for me, it's a great way for me to, as a curator, expose our donors and also give an opportunity to younger patrons who may not be able to buy a gala ticket, expose our donors to the sorts of weird programming that we like at MoCA. And I just kind of want to freak people out. I want people to, you know, just think it's like the weirdest thing that they encounter. There were some people that I talked to that really hated it too. I think 95% of people really enjoyed it and 5% of people were just totally grossed out by it. So if 95% of people like what you do, I think that's a pretty good percentage. I mean, and really when I had designed the event, the fall fundraiser we had the year before was a Warhol factory themed event. And the two most frequent comments I got back was that there wasn't enough male nudity and there wasn't enough food. So I think I took care of that with this year's fall fundraiser because we had male nudity and lots of food and male nudity covered in food. So, I'm just always trying to take audience feedback and apply it in a meaningful way.
You just aim to please.
Yes.
If this had been done in a more conservative community, what kind of a response do you think you might have gotten? Or maybe you can even pull from some negative responses that you might have gotten to things in the past.
When I was in San Diego, there was a few things that I did there that I didn't think were at all controversial or edgy, and I definitely wasn't trying to push the envelope in any sort of way. And people would just be so upset. Like, you know, we worked with this artist. I don't know if you remember last year, we had a mural on the side of the building by this artist, Panka. She's a well-known street artist in Tijuana, and I had her do a mural on the side of MoCA that was the sort of two-headed woman straddling both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. When I was in San Diego, I did a commission with her, a mural. It was a naked woman sort of tearing apart and eating these other women. And, it's an interesting metaphor. It's a beautiful piece, a huge mural. And people were so offended by that. And people, I got a lot of hate mail for that. And even when the artist was painting the mural, people were like yelling at her. And it was a really traumatic experience for the artist and for me. And for me, it like never occurred to me that this would be an offensive piece. And I thought at first people were offended by the nudity. But apparently they were more offended by the cannibalism. It was like the weirdest thing. And people were like, oh, this is a family museum. Like, this is a family space. And it's like, oh, well, you know, you can see nudity in museums all, you know, across the world. And, you know, literally the museum across the street has, you know, nude females in it. So I couldn't quite get it. And for me, it was about educating our audiences about like, oh, this is just a different style of painting. It's street art. But, you know, these narratives carry through in all of these works that you're looking at. So I could never quite understand what audiences wanted in Southern California. You know, the best we can try and do is offer lots of different programming for, you know, different audiences. And, you know, some things are going to work and some things aren't. And there you are.
Do you want to give me a couple of the greatest hits of your worst hate mail?
Well, I haven't gotten any hate mail since I've been in Tucson. So I don't know if, like, I'm not pushing the envelope. I'm like, what could I do? I've had public urination. I've had, like, you know, bodily cutting and blood, you know, chalices being filled up with menstrual fluid, you know, peanut butter sex. Like, none of this has offended anyone. But like when I was in San Diego, I got this really great piece of hate mail on elephant stationery, which I have it still. I kept it because it's just beautiful that you can send someone hate mail on elephant stationery. What I did, actually, I curated a show in San Diego and I made copies of the hate mail. And so people who came to the show, they could take it with them. And, you know, for me, it was just a way to like take the power away from that individual and sort of like show how absurd it is that someone can get upset about art. I mean, when I was in Staten Island, though, I mean, I worked in Staten Island for a long time. I was getting death threats out there. I was working at the Arts Council in Staten Island, and artists who did not receive grants, two in particular, would harass me. I couldn't go out in public. And one said he was bringing a gun to this meeting, and the police had to come. It was like really traumatic for me. And I mean, for me, it's like, oh, you're going to kill me over not getting $5,000? Like, yeah.
Wow. Wow. That is really something else. I also wanted to ask you about the science and tech communities and their role in the arts in Tucson. Clearly, we have some major players in this community in terms of science and technology. And it seems that they have made some real efforts to invest in STEM education. And a lot of us are in conversations about how can we make STEM education really STEAM education.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's still STEM. I think, you know, it's been STEAM in New York for like 20 years. When I came here, I was like, wait, where'd the A go? I think there's supposed to be an A in there. I'm confused. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important, especially, you know, for MoCA in terms of our education programming. You know, we work with teaching artists to bring, you know, arts programming and curriculum into Title I schools across Tucson to supplement STEM curriculum, to put the A back in STEAM. I think that that's super important. But I think that there's a lot, you know, more we can do. I think that we need to collaborate more across sectors. You know, what happened to like the arts and sciences? It used to be the arts and sciences, and they've become such separate disciplines. And I think that there's a real opportunity here to do more. You know, I have these ideas, and you know, maybe we can make them happen. You know, we have this artist in residence program at MoCA. I'd love to have a scientist in residence who, you know, is inspired by the artists whose work we're showing at MoCA and creates new work. This is something that I was doing in San Diego, was a lot of artist and scientist collaborations. And I think that that's something that we've talked about doing more at MoCA. Like, maybe we put an artist in residence in science department, and then we take a science in residence and we do a trade-off and we have them work with MoCA. And so it is something that we're looking into and developing more. So stay tuned. There could be, you know, a show in the future based on that. But I think that we need to, you know, better value the importance of arts in a well-rounded education, because if students don't have access to the arts, we're not going to have the next generation of creative thinkers to solve the world's problems. It's great to have scientists and engineers, but you also need artists, or you're not going to be able to think creatively. So hopefully we'll get it together.
Creative confidence is necessary for all types of innovation.
Absolutely.
If you had a crystal ball, what kind of things might you see in the future of arts, culture, and even science in Tucson?
Well, I know what I'd like to see. I don't know if it's in the near future, but I would love to see more funding come to arts and cultural organizations in Tucson. I think that we need to better value the importance of our cultural organizations in Tucson. And I know it's something that people don't talk about publicly, and maybe we should, but I see a lot of cultural organizations that are struggling to, you know, make ends meet here. And, you know, I hear a lot of talk about downtown development. Well, there's a lot of cultural organizations in downtown Tucson. And I think if we invested in those cultural organizations, you know, we're the ones driving tourism here. I think that maybe there is some opportunity to collectively market Tucson as a cultural destination. Tucson's a beautiful place. There's a lot to compete with in terms of, you know, the beauty, the nature of and landscape. But in the summer, it's really hot in Tucson. And, you know, museums are a great place to come in the summertime and, you know, see something new and cool off. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, even MoCA Tucson, a lot of our funding is not local. We don't have a lot of, I mean, I don't know of any local foundations that support us. Most of our foundation support is nationally and international support. So, you know, we get that recognition on a national and global level. I wish that we could get more recognition for the important work that we're doing right here in Tucson. Just putting it out there. Yeah, I mean, you know, our audiences love what we do. Our attendance is on the rise. So now we just need to translate that into foundations and corporations supporting the work of, and not just my museum, all the museums and cultural organizations in Tucson.
I love that you're willing to just put it out there. We need to be better funded. But by the same token, when you came on the scene at MoCA, you brought the admission cost down.
Yes, that's very important to me. I, you know, the daily visitor who comes to MoCA is not our largest funder necessarily. I would rather have thousands and thousands of people coming to MoCA for free than people who can't pay the admission fee. And we do a lot of free programming for people. Our galleries are packed now. Our admission, our numbers have doubled in 2 years. We have twice the amount of visitors that were coming when I came 2 years ago. And I think a lot of that is because we lowered our admissions and people see the value placed on that. When our admissions were $8, people were like, I don't know if I got $8 of value here. And now with $5 admissions, everyone thinks it's great and it's a deal, you know? So that's the sort of psychology behind, you know, like, I'd rather have lots of people paying $5 than no one paying $8. And, you know, at the end of the year, you actually get more admission dollars from a lot of people paying $5 than fewer people paying $8. And I just want MoCA to be a space where all different people from our community are able to enjoy what we're doing and see themselves reflected in the programming and know it's a place for them and it's accessible and it's fun. And I want everyone to feel welcome.
I think it's great that what you've done at MoCA is testament to the fact that you can balance accessibility and finances. They don't have to be in direct conflict with each other.
They don't, hopefully, in an ideal world. Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about some of the beautiful things we'd like to see in that crystal ball. What if we went dystopic? What would be some of the negative scenes that we might see in the crystal ball?
It's going to happen in the future. It's hard. I mean, I feel like I moved to Tucson at the right time because it has not reached that tipping point where it's too hip, too expensive. You know, it's right at that precipice. And, you know, my family, for the most part, lives in Nashville, Tennessee. And I saw, you know, Tucson reminds me a lot of Nashville 25 years ago. And most of my family wants to leave Nashville now because it is like, it's all hipster, gentrified, super expensive. And it's like, they pushed for that. And now that's where they're at. You know, like, there is that, how do you find that healthy balance between being a livable city with small, like, mom and pop shops and a destination where you draw, you know, it's, I don't know, it's really hard to say because as a museum director, I clearly want people with money to be in Tucson that support what we're doing. And with that comes, like, you know, headquarters of corporations and, you know, the rising prices of houses. But at the same time, you know, we wanted a place where artists can live. We want to maintain a city where it is affordable for artists to have studio space and housing and all those things that make Tucson special. We want to keep that. Yeah. I think Tucson's the most beautiful place I've ever lived in, so I love it here.
Were there any stories that you would like to share? Anything? Anything?
There were two young people, like, practically having sex in the KXCI listening lounge. So I take that as a huge compliment, that the exhibition that's up right now, Dazzled, where KXCI is a sponsor. They did a really great playlist for the show, and they have a listening lounge under the stairs where you can hang out and listen to records and make out. Apparently, I flipped the record for them. I was like, do you want me to flip the record? This is a little weird. Are you sure you want, like, little kids hang out here? But the show's so sexy, I guess, that it just turns people on. So I thought, you know, that's pretty cool.
I love that little under the stairwell space. It's really kind of a strange little triangular shape. It's kind of hollowed out, and y'all do something interesting with it every time.
We try. I mean, I want people to have, you know, as I've mentioned, an experience in the space and an unexpected experience. And it's very rare that you get to go to a museum and just, like, lay on the floor and listen to records. You know, like, that's cool. That's the sort of space that I would have wanted to go to when I was, you know, a kid. I didn't go to a museum until I was in college. I just never had access to museums or an opportunity to go to any. So I think about, like, if I was younger, what would have had me, you know, drawn me to go to have these experiences? And I think something like that, it's accessible. And, you know, people who, you know, come to the exhibition because they like the music aspect of it, they may not necessarily come to MoCA otherwise, but they're drawn to the music and then they stay for the show. So, you know, we're bringing in a bunch of new audiences with the exhibition. People who are interested in, like, you know, military history and art and design and music. And it's just really exciting to see this show appeal to so many, you know, to so many people. It's really great.
I did have two questions for me to spring on you.
Mm. Great. Ready.
But they shouldn't be too hard. So I noticed on your email signature that it says the Museum of Contemporary Art Tucson resides on the on the traditional land of the Tohono O'odham people. Mm. Could you tell us about using that on the signature?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for people to know whose land they're on, especially as an institution in Tucson that has, you know, a very large indigenous community on it. We need to recognize and honor the people who are here and who have lived on the space that the museum's on.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Ginger.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.